stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Say, shit, if this gonna be that kind of party, I'm gonna stick my dick in the mashed potato.
Is that it? 14 seconds?
Yeah, that's it, dude. That's 14 seconds of gold.
Yeah. I
mean, wouldn't you want to be to that? I'd want to go to that kind of party.
Yeah. So I wouldn't
eat the mashed potatoes.
No. But I would know where to put my dick, which would be in the mashed potatoes.
It would be.
And, of course, if you're a big comedy fan, the comedian we are talking about, a comedian named Mantan Moreland.
No, I know what he likes to do with his dick.
Or you know what he likes to do with his mashed potatoes. Yeah,
exactly.
And also, he is known for being sampled by the Beastie Boys on this track.
Shit, if this is going to be that kind of party, I'm going to stick my dick in the mashed potato.
Oh, he was considered a possible addition to the Three Stooges in 1955.
What? No way, really?
If it's the same Mantan.
Okay.
But very cool is that he got his start as a comedian working with alongside Red Fox at the Apollo Theater in the 40s. And how this all ties in is that he is part of a genre of comedy, a recorded genre of comedy called party records. First of all, welcome to our podcast, Comedy History 101. Where we talk about the history of comedy. I am Harmon Leon, and with me is...
Scott Colonico. I am a party robot now.
Hey, did you hear that we got like one comment on iTunes?
I did see that. I need
pretty
this...
favorable, but they had two critiques of you and myself.
Yes.
They said, you say a lot.
That's a whole other podcast, but that's my catchphrase. That's like my line.
That's branding, dude. It's our branding. It's our catchphrases. It's our get her done.
That'd be like telling LaWanda Page not to say, watch it, sucka. On Sanford and Son, you know?
Exactly. And again, there's more tying everything together because LaWanda Page, very relevant to our topic today, which is the history of party records, most particularly the comedy label Laugh Records, which was recorded some of their best albums in the 60s and 70s and included like such comedians as Richard Pryor, Red Fox, LaWanda Page, as we just mentioned. George Carlin recorded one album with them, his album Killer Carlin. Also kind of lesser known comedians, largely African-American. They recorded Pipeline Dan, Tina Dixon, Skillet and Leroy, and one of my new favorite party record discoveries, Richard and Willie.
They kind of had a different kind of thing going on, didn't they?
Well, Richard and Willie was a ventriloquist.
Yeah,
he was referred to as Pryor with a dummy.
Yeah.
So and a really great album I came across of theirs is called Low Down and Dirty, recorded in 1969.
You ever been in Mississippi before?
Shit, I was down there 2 years ago. Why did they trick you down in Mississippi? They told me they want me to be on a dick show. What was the name of the show? I thought they said sing and tell jokes, but it actually said swing on a short rope.
Yeah, but what I liked about it, and it's kind of a reflection of our fucked up times now, is that it was very kind of on the pulse of kind of racial politics of 1969, but hearing it in 2017, a comedian making almost the exact same jokes in Donald Trump's America, the jokes felt like really fresh and relevant,
right,
sadly.
Yeah.
Basically, they had this great bit about, driving through the South and being, pulled over by police in Alabama and all that shit. So.
Look, man, you in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. You driving along the road. Okay, what happened? A white policeman tell you to get out the car. What you do? I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah, a white policeman tell me to get out the car. Yeah, what you do, sucker? I asked him, what does he want me to get out for? Don't you go down there. Don't you go down there. What do? You get the hell out. That's the first thing you do. Now, after you get out the car, you understand, he tell you to walk the white line. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah, a white policeman tells me to walk the white line. Yeah, what you do, sucker? I walk it. Don't you go down there. Don't you go down there. What do I do then? You tell him to paint it black, and then you walk it.
Sadly, very relevant to kind of how police treat African Americans in 2017.
Don't you go down there. That was it. That was the dummy.
Yeah. It's like one.
The weird thing is that the dummy had been down to the South before.
Yeah, like on his own.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how that worked, but he had some problems.
So what happened then? I started running. You started running. Yeah. So what the Ku Klux Klansmen do? They shot at me. They shot at you? Yeah, how many times? One time? Wait a minute. How do you know they only shot at you? How do you know they only shot at you one time? Because I heard that damn bullet twice. How can you possibly hear one bullet twice? Look, man. I heard it once when it passed me. And again when I passed it.
Again, so anyways, the history of party records. Party records are basically albums that adults would play at night while the kids were in bed. It also goes back to, you know, stag records. You put on one of these albums at a stag party. And what really kind of defined party records were, they were very blue, as they say, in comedy terms, which was like very kind of sexual themed, and you had swearing. Basically, there were albums you had to go to the record store and ask for them because they were sold like under the counter, like in like a brown wrapper, almost like you're doing it like a drug deal or buying porn in Christian conservative America.
But apparently, some of them, even after you took the wrapper off, they would have pictures of naked women on the covers of these. But they're like, for example, their nipples would be covered with more stickers. But apparently you could take these stickers off if you wanted.
Yeah, and if you took the stickers off, there would be a nipple.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's another great aspect of party records, is they just had these really great
colorful covers.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it, and a lot of them are just kind of, the scenario is a man is in bed with a woman and like an angry husband walks in.
Yeah, that's
so I'm looking at a few of these, and that is sort of a theme. Like one is Pipeline Dan and LaWanda Page, who we most became famous as you said, Aunt Esther on Sanford and Son.
I want to talk about you men a little while. Yeah, I'm going to talk about them, honey, dirty son of a bitches. They take the whores out to the bars. They buy champagne and every damn thing. The whores falling in there with the mink stoles and the diamond rings, honey. Honey, them whores got money, honey, because they done took all the money your husband had.
So Pipeline Dan's in bed with another woman, and LaWanda Page is in the frame, and she's holding up a rolling pin.
That's the classic rolling pin, which I think she would do that on Sanford and Son sometimes too.
Yeah. So she had a pretty amazing career. Came up, you know, doing the African American comedy circuit, and she actually knew Red Fox like when they were preteens growing up in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know who else Red Fox knew when he was younger?
Malcolm X.
Yeah, that was crazy. They worked together on a Pullman car, I think.
Was he known as like St. Louis Red, or is that what?
Yeah,
because
apparently, like he had red hair back then. Yeah, that's where the name comes from.
So he wasn't communist.
No, he wasn't. He's running a junkyard. It's fine.
Yeah. So the big label of Party Records was Laugh Records, and the predecessor to that was a label called Dutu Records.
So did Dutu keep going at the same time after Laugh? I mean, I know Laugh kind of took it over. It looks like they had the big names.
Ah, interesting tidbit. Dutu wasn't strictly a comedy record label. It also did a lot of like doo-wop and like 50s doo-wop, and they also did comedy. But the thing is, Red Fox first recorded his album Laugh of the Party on Dutu Records.
There's old man was sitting on the bus looking out the window reading the racing form, and the young girl got on there. It was so crowded, she didn't have nowhere to sit, and he was sitting right on the end. She just said, He said, I'm an old man. I'd like to give you my seat, but I'm an old man. But I tell you what you can do. You can sit right down here on my lap. I'm an old man, and it don't make no difference, if you know what I mean. She said, oh, why? Okay. And so she sat down in the old man's lap, and they started hitting a few bumps down here on Central, you know, where they build it up. And they bumped about a block and a half. The old man said, look here, daughter, I think you better get up, because I ain't old as I thought I was.
And at the time, it was kind of a risky thing because he was, you know, working the nightclub circuit, and he thought if he recorded a blue album, that would ruin his ticket sales at the nightclubs. So he still recorded this album on Dutu Records, Laugh of the Party, and it ended up in like 1955 times selling 250,000 records.
Okay, all right, you can't turn away from that.
No, so then after that, he just kept recording albums, like blue-themed albums. From there, he went over to Laugh Records.
So what did they have? I think you mentioned something even before. If we could go into the proto-history, the prehistory of these. There was those records from the 1940s that you were talking about earlier.
So party albums, I mean, like putting out like kind of a blue, you know, kind of album wasn't anything that was new. Like in the 40s, I found these records called, they were like 78s, and at the time, they were considered so obscene that it was illegal even to produce, buy, sell, or possess these records. So there were these 78s, and they had like routines like the urinal or the hair lip salesman, and you listen to them now in 2017 years, and it's pretty tame.
Well, just for the fun of it, I thought I'd make a list of all the different types of men that I watched pissing in a public lavatory. You go ahead and read the list off, wifey, and I'll show you what I mean.
All right, honey, here goes. The first one says excitable man.
Excitable man. Well, sir, he's the one that has his shorts all twisted around, can't find the hole, so he rips his pants in a rage.
But you had to go into a record store and buy these under the counter.
Yeah,
it's kind of like I think like the equivalent is like you ever take like road trips like through Texas or whatever, and you go to truck stops, and then there's always like the CDs of trucker comedians you never heard of.
Right. Yeah.
So I always just like ironically like buy those up, but I think it was like kind of similar like that. You could only find these under the counter, or you had to be like in the know.
Yeah, I think it was like with the technology thing. I think it's just the novelty of, because that like that urinal salesman one is just.
You listened to that?
Yeah, of course I did. Yeah, there's nice. That one, and the, what was the other one, the Dr. Pooh or whatever one.
Well, I'd been to every doctor in town, and somebody said that old Doc Schitz was the best doctor for piles. So I went up to his office, and on the way up the steps, you know, getting up there, I shoveled shit both sides of the steps with my feet. I got up to his office and sat down in a pile of shit in a chair, and old Doc Schitz came out with a long beard on and a mustache full of shit, and he was wringing it out with both hands, you know. Well, he came up to me, and after wringing shit out of his beard, he shook hands with me, and it wasn't long before I was slinging shit right back at him, you know. Well, he said, kind of genial-like, now get up there on that table and turn it up to me. So I did. I knew what he meant. And he said, pull it wide open. So I did. I got hold of the cheeks on both sides, and I pulled it and stretched it as much as I could, and two or three of them goddamn little piles jumped out. He said, say, he said, let me put my hand up there. And he put some kind of a sock on his hand and ran it clear up there, and gentlemen, I hadn't shit for 3 days, and did he ever waller in it.
So that was just like double entendres, yeah, and all that shit.
Well, but towards the end of it, it's not even, they're just saying shit a lot, and I think it's just the novelty of them getting away with being able to say this, where you could not hear this in any other recorded medium, you know?
Yeah.
So they broke that down, so to us, now, it doesn't sound like that big of a deal, you know?
Well, it's like the 1940s, so I don't know when the Hays Code ended. So when like movies were being censored, you know, just getting a record with a guy saying shit a lot was unbelievable. Like, right. You would probably, I just picture having like a 1940s stag party. Like, it's stag night, and you would pull out these like 78
right.
records and put it on, and it'd be like, oh my god.
And then we'd drink a couple of...
Give me another bourbon.
Give me a bourbon.
Put that one on again.
We're gonna go fondle the stewardess.
The difference was those were white comedians doing it, and another predecessor was a guy named Bert Henry.
Just the other day, this lady walked into the furniture store. The clerk came over and says, can I help you? She says, yes, I'd like to buy a sexual couch. I beg your pardon? I'd like to buy a sexual couch. Well, I don't want to seem rude, but I think you made a mistake. You mean sectional. She says, sectional, smectional. I don't care, as long as I get an occasional piece in the living room.
He's found on Adam Stag Party Record 3, The Shocking Humor of Bert Henry, mm-hmm. who was a blue, which is in quotes, Los Angeles comedian back in the 50s and 60s, who looked like kind of like a TV sitcom dad of the day. And recorded albums in kind of divey LA bars with, and here's how they describe it, stunningly X-rated for their day, some featuring body naked lady album covers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just, you know, a lot of just kind of double entendres.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of half naked ladies on these album covers. I mean, we'll have to say it. It wasn't the most progressive female roles on the cover. Even LaWanda Page, like you said, she's holding a roller pin, and she's kind of mad on a lot of her covers.
You got to give them like some creds, like even in almost up until modern day, that, you know, featuring like women comedians, and that's probably another thing of party records is, you know, some of their big recording stars were women comedians, you know. I know it's around the same time you would have like Phyllis Diller and, you know, but there just wasn't a lot of like female comedians. And then here, like, some of their big recording stars are female comedians.
Yeah, well, not just female, like black female comedians.
Yeah,
too,
exactly. You know, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So back in you know, like the 60s and 70s. So you got to give Laugh Records that credit. This is another Laugh Record recording artist, female comedian, Tina Dixon, who on her album cover, Calling All Freaks, it says, the bigger the cushion, the better the pushing.
Oh,
and she's sort of like in a, I don't, is it like a tutu or like a corset? And yeah, she's kind of looking at the camera like, ah.
I don't know. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So again, it's kind of blue.
Snort good cocaine. Don't be ashamed. Because you know one thing, that's the name of the game. Take another drink, cocksucker. Don't be sober, because you just must, and you just might bust your nuts before this shit is over. Yeah, the freaks.
You can see where, you know, a lot of the rap and stuff later on came from, you know, where it's a lot of just people getting up and telling these rhyming kind of stories. Dolomite is probably the best example of this, where that first track is just him telling a story.
Yeah, and by the way, that track was sampled by techno band The Crystal Method.
Oh, really?
For their song Name of the Game.
Okay, well, you know what's interesting about that cover, too, is that you've got Tina up front saying, Calling All Freaks. And then over to the right, you have the Laugh Records mascot saying, how in another speech bubble, because they're big into speech bubbles,
yeah.
You know, how would you like to stick your pin in that cushion, I guess, talking about?
The label's owner was a guy named, well, actually, I think the main guy was, I think his name was Richard Drosen. It was really his son who was like the main producer of Laugh Records.
Yeah, he took over from his dad, right? I mean, that was pretty much it, the story there.
Yeah, and just another feature of Laugh or Party Records is how shitty they were recorded. That, and if you read about it, that was just like a known thing of like these, they were just recorded like so bad, like so cheaply, like basically just a microphone in a club, like where you just hear all the clanking and just like poor recording quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they would do it in a studio where they would actually have a for real recording studio, but then they invite a bunch of people into the studio, so it sounded like a club.
Yeah, exactly. So it's either like recorded, and the main clubs that they recorded at was Red Fox's Club. So I think it was called the Red Fox Club. And this sounds creepy in 2017 days. The co-owner of the Red Fox's Club was Bill Cosby.
Oh my. Okay,
I know. Doesn't that sound like, and just with modern knowledge?
Yeah, it's
a looking... late night nightclub. A lot of
booze.
Drink specials, in quotes.
Medicine cabinet.
Yeah. So, but so a lot of these live laugh records were recorded at Red Fox's Club, which was, yeah, like on La Cienega. If you've been to LA, that's like, you know, one of the main streets right in the heart of Hollywood. And a lot of clanking of glasses. But one thing I picked up from just listening to these is just how much the audiences were just like laughing and just shrieking and just like just way just getting into it so much.
But honey, when that son of a bitch come in, I tell you what you do. Get smart like the whores, baby. Do what the whores do, honey. Take that son of a bitch and put him in the bed and fuck him good.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, call and response type things, you know, that you'll hear from the audience going back to the performer and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just like you're capturing this slice of non-mainstream comedy.
Yeah, that producer David Drozen had some pretty good stories, especially with Richard Pryor that I wanted to bring up here, which are pretty interesting. So when he was talking that they were recording that Craps album.
That was Richard Pryor's second album.
Yeah.
But go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, when he was recording that, apparently Richard Pryor was so coked out that David Drozen had to go into Richard's apartment, carry him out over his shoulder so they could do the photo shoot for the cover of the album. Apparently if you look at him on the album cover, you can see he's pretty out there. He's pretty wired.
Yeah. So he was, so that was the thing that put, that album put Laugh Records like on, it was Richard Pryor's first breakout album, which was recorded in 1971, Craps with the, in parentheses, After Hours album.
This is kind of when he was doing his real comedy. It was like after the period when he'd been on, already been on like Sullivan and stuff.
Started snorting cocaine. Had to quit that too, because I wake up in the middle of the night and say to my wife, "You fucking the paper boy."
I mean, this is a whole another podcast in itself. Right.
Hey, that was my line.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, you can go. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So Richard Pryor, like, he started as like kind of like a mainstream Bill Cosby. And again, it sounds like horrible what he's saying, Bill Cosby type comedian, but in style. But listening to a podcast of George Slatter the other day, producer of Laughing, I heard it. He said it was the opposite of the way around. Like Bill Cosby was taking from Richard Pryor even when Richard Pryor was clean. Mm-hmm. But Richard Pryor like totally like ditched that. I think he went up to Berkeley and just started hanging around like Berkeley, California, counterculture,
right,
and then he came back and started doing comedy again. Mm-hmm. So this was like part where like his rebirth into comedy, and then they recorded the Richard Pryor Crap album again. That's recorded at Red Fox's Club. Yeah, there's a good bit on there about being in a police lineup.
I'd be running from the cops and shit, you know, because we have like curfew 11 o'clock. Right, you had to be home. Niggas had to be home by 11. Negroes, 12. And white cops worked at night. Your ass was in trouble if they caught you. Right, they catch you in the alley. Get your hands up, black boy. I didn't do nothing. Shut up, punk. Put your hands against the wall.
There ain't no wall.
Find one.
Like, some of the bits, like, don't really kind of, like, carry well.
Okay,
like the bits about punching your wife.
Yeah, there's a lot. That's another thing. A lot of those. Red Fox makes quite a few of those punching your wife jokes.
Yeah, and the mainstream face of that is the Honeymooners.
Yeah, that's right.
Like Alice, one of these days to the moon.
That's not very nice.
I know. Vernon Chapman, when he used to do stand-up, he had a bit about that. It was like, they're going to do a new Honeymooners and update it, and the line's going to be, Alice, one of these days they're going to punch you in the face.
Oh, dear.
But where it was like kind of like modern day Pryor. Yeah, there's a good bit about him being in a police lineup.
Take you downtown. You've been downtown? You folks know about going downtown. And they talk shit to you, right? Good thing you ain't in Alabama, boy. We clean your goddamn plow. And I'd be glad I wasn't in Alabama, too. I hate it for him to call my father up, though, right? Because he's a...
Mr. Pryor, we have your son down here at headquarters. What about it?
Fuck him.
But here's the thing with Laugh Records. So they recorded Richard Pryor's Crap album for Laugh Records. And so that became so successful that his next album, I think, was on Warner Brothers. For the Crap album, they recorded like so much material. So the album's only like 35 minutes long, and a lot of these albums are just like about 35 minutes long. That when Richard Pryor left and went to I think Warner Brothers, they still had all these back tapes, so they would just keep reissuing all the unused material that was on the Crap album, and so each release would get significantly not as good as the last one.
And I just had to point out here, Harmon, that it's called the Craps, plural.
Yeah, Craps. Because he's playing Craps on the cover.
Right, not Crap, or like the shit joke. I think one, a good example of that, if I could skip forward a little bit, a couple years here in time, to touch on that, what you just talked about with recycling Pryor's material. So Richard and Willie, the ventriloquist pair, put out an album, and one of their albums put out on Laugh was Richard Pryor meets Richard and Willie and the SLA, which is
excellent album cover.
Yeah, which is just, it's, I think Pryor's a dummy too on that, and then there's Richard and Willie, and then there's somebody who looks like they're with the SLA. But what's the interesting thing is that you would get from the title of the album is that all three of them are together and they're not a factory. They're just recycling those Richard Pryor bits in this album. They're just dropped into this album randomly.
Yeah, I started listening to that and I was trying to figure out, which one's Pryor and which one is Richard and Willie. And they were just kind of like, if someone just dropped them all in, like, back-to-back,
yeah,
without a segue.
Yeah, there's no segues or nothing. It's just all cut up in a lot of 70s jokes. That album's from 1976.
Yeah, a lot of Nixon jokes.
And a lot of Ford jokes.
Yeah. So it's like some of that material was on Craps that are dropped into that album. But, yeah, that was a thing that Laugh Records did was they would just recycle and repackage material on prior recordings. And when I say prior, that's what I meant.
Yeah, not Richard Pryor recordings. Or
oh, here's a fact I didn't drop in. So when Red Fox was on Dutu Records, he recorded 14 albums between 1956 and 1958.
Jesus.
Which is a lot of listening, but I wonder if it's like he's doing like new material on those 14 albums, or are they repackaging, or he has like 14 albums worth of new material.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a lot of Red Fox to have to listen to.
I know. Maybe we should do a podcast on the history of comedy and where we actually know these things. So let's figure out who Baroness Bobo is.
So was that the drag queen?
Yeah. So
okay.
I haven't listened to it. So let's just hear what this track is. Hold on. Oh, Baroness Bobo had an album, African American drag queen, and had an album called Mouse in My Pants.
Oh, okay, dear. Oh my heavens. Okay.
Every country represents its own section of love, but France has been known for lovers. But there was a Frenchman. He met this sister. She looked like an M&M to him. You know what that do? It melts in your mouth, not in your hand.
You know, that's another, like, kind of old school form is the long storytelling joke. Let me just explain the album cover. Man is standing there. And he's dressed, he has his crotch out, And Baroness Bobo is looking at him, and the word bubble says, "Oh my God, is that a mouse?" and Vanessa also exemplifies a lot of the humor on Party Records. They were like very, very big on the double entendres. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you have the woodpecker song.
Woodpecker pecking in my backyard. Tell me why your pecker gets hard. Hard pecker. Hard pecker.
Right. And then, of course, there's the famous LaWanda record, The Pipe Laying Dan, because, you know, he's laying pipes. And so in the cover of Pipe Laying Dan, LaWanda's caught what I assume is to be Dan in bed with another woman. And she's, this is where she's got the rolling pin. And,
yes.
And the Dan, Pipe Laying Dan, is just saying, just discussing some plumbing, honey, about the woman.
Exactly.
And then the other woman in bed is saying, "Oh, wow, what a wrench."
Yeah, these album covers are great. It's either topless woman, but the ones where they actually had a photo shoot, and they're just all kind of just really funny.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it's almost like a live action cartoon kind of looking. But then it seems like a lot of these... they wound up kind of doing some kind of takeoffs on, like, the popular albums of the day. Like, for example, mm-hmm. I noticed a lot of the Richard and Willie albums look kind of like a Lawrence Welk album, kind of. Like, they've got one where it's one that kind of looks like a Christmas album kind of thing, in that kind of 70s font and very... actually almost shot pretty well. Shot like a standard normal-looking album, but, you know, tongue-in-cheek.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was kind of like the style of, like, 60s records. It's kind of like a stage sort of a scene, which is like they're taking off on.
Yeah, I mean, like, and a lot of the stuff on the Doto,
I think it's Doto.
A lot of that in the label, like, that they actually had for real, even on some of these Red Fox albums, it's like for real kind of, I would call it space age bachelor patch, kind of like the Esquivel kind of album covers, where they're kind of aping style of the day. These are almost straightforward design. They're just kind of trying to look like legitimate album covers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the graphics are great. Like, on these old Red Fox album covers, kind of like, you know, the jazz records of the day.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of, even the Red Fox ones on these. Yeah, Doo-Doo apparently had a little bit more of a budget for marketing and record labels.
Yeah, so, you know, because their main thing was doo-wop records, so I think that's where they made most of their money until, like, Red Fox came along. It'd be interesting to see, like, if he's doing, like, new material on every album cover, or every album. And another big breakout star, which is funny and ties into Red Fox, is a comedian called Sloppy Leroy Dick.
Oh yeah, Slop. That he's on this. But yeah, he's on that on the Doo-Doo label.
That next morning when we got up, I got up and got ready to go to work, and she walked me to the door. She said, "Goodbye, Oatmeal." I said, "What's wrong with you? My name Leroy. Why you call me Oatmeal?" She said, "Because after 3 minutes, you were done."
He started on the Doo-Doo label, then went to Laugh Records, where he teamed up with a guy named Skillet. So it was like Skillet and Daniels. And do you want to know how it all ties in together? They became like semi-regulars on Sanford and Son.
Yeah, because they were part of a sketch comedy team with LaWanda.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so they were a sketch comedy team in Los Angeles in the 60s, and then they kind of, it looks like, from what I was reading about, was Wanda had a guest spot on Sanford and Son, where it turned into a regular kind of role, and then she looks like they brought Daniels and Skillet and Daniels along, too. So it was all the regulars there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of like a cool tie, you know?
Yeah.
So another cool feature of the album covers, speaking of the album covers, was the back cover liner notes, which, according to an article I wrote, were written in a bizarre black beatnik language that no one in the hood ever spoke, written by Shelby Meadows Ashford, a woman who joined the company as a bookkeeper.
Oh, my God. Can we hear what some of those sound like?
Yeah, okay, so this is from the back cover of, I don't know what album it is, but one of the Laugh Records album covers. A parade of clowns and jesters So like it or lump it, hate it or hump it, your lights are going to be blinking bright over the risque disc. Black folk taught white folk how to dance, and then they taught white folk to laugh, in capitals. Spent another XXX-filled evening with another XXX-filled album.
All right.
Got me sold.
All right. I'm there for it.
Yeah.
I'm hip to it.
Yeah, so I think it's just like that was like kind of the cool thing about, you know, you get these albums, you buy them under the counter, back covers like in some weird kind of beatnik, kind of like beatnik poetry, and then you're getting like these, you know, extra blue, risque, dirty, you know, material, you know, these dirty comedy albums, like X-rated comedy albums.
Mm-hmm. That you had to go and ask for, and the parents would try to hide from the kids, and would only slip on at night when they knew that the kids weren't up and listening.
You know, that's another like kind of old school form is the long storytelling joke.
Yeah, like the extended rhymes and stuff like that. There's a lot of those in there.
Like Laugh Records was sort of like an underground record label, but. There are components that made it to mainstream. So Baroness Bobo was a drag queen, but then again, you know, in the mainstream, you know, roughly around the same era, Flip Wilson became popular, like as a drag character.
Right. Yeah. And then you know, then we can all see where RuPaul.
What was the name of the drag character, Flip Wilson?
Oh, Geraldine.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so yeah, Flip Wilson became popular with Geraldine,
yeah,
which is an African-American drag character. So right. Again, that became in sort of into the mainstream.
Yeah, okay. And
if you look on like, or you listen to like one of LaWanda Page's like albums, like her tagline was, "Sock it to me."
Right.
And where did that end up?
Well, I think that was kind of a big 70s thing. I don't know if that was particularly hers. Could be wrong, but I think that was just kind of a... It was kind of like a 70s phrase.
But also, like, into, like, something that was, like, on the underground circuit in the mainstream and on the same TV show was Here Comes the Judge, was an old Pig Meat Martin bit.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, here comes the judge. Here comes the judge. Everybody know that he is the judge.
Yeah. So I was just listening to an interview with George Slatter, the creator of Laugh-In, and he said, right. Yeah, we'll have Sammy Davis Jr. come out and do like Pig Meat Martin's line while dressed as a judge or something, and that's the gag.
Yeah, okay, no, but it's so fast. Bam.
Yeah. So what do you think is Party Records' place in history?
Well, I mean, it's interesting, yeah. It's obviously, they did a great job of bringing up these black performers, mostly black performers that people had never heard of into mm-hmm. the mainstream. Cause it's just so weird watching when you read about Sanford and Son and you see all these people who all started out at the same time. And what was really interesting hearing that, the first, like, when you told me we were going to be doing this, and then I listened to that first LaWanda Page album and the first, Aunt Esther going, "Well, I'm talking about my pussy, and I fuck, you know." It's just like so, like, whoa, hold on.
Yeah,
it's just so it's over just, the top. Yeah,
yeah. So it's just like it helped to integrate the stand-up scene, you know, with African American performers, you know, at a time when, it's the '60s. So there was Dick Gregory at the time, and. You know, Bill Cosby, but they're like, you know, playing Vegas in, you know, tuxedos and all that. And this brought to light this whole other, you know, black comic circuit that was like, you know, touring America or in like, you know, major cities like Los Angeles and New York, where, you know, these were comedians that were ignored by big record labels. And also, I think it's also that recording, the crappy recording quality actually sort of added to it. Because you actually felt like you're in the club because you could hear like the clinking of glasses and like everything else, you know, where nowadays you would mic, you'd run the audio equipment through the mic right into the soundboard and maybe have another channel for the audience. But here it just felt like you were sitting at a table in these clubs.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously it's like with the Red Fox record, I mean, it was just like you said, they pointed out, like, here's the place where we could make more, you know, where more money can be made, right? And so that opened up a whole new avenue for performers, you know, to get paid in other ways, where you said, like you mentioned, where Red Fox was afraid that it would be taking away his ticket sales, and it turned out to be the, now it's exactly the opposite paradigm today, where performers are making their money from touring as opposed to album sales.
Oh, that, and I'm going to take your catchphrase. That's a different podcast on its own. Because there's no money
recording.
So, yeah, there we go. Yeah. So, that's a good point. So, but then again, it's also look at the careers that were launched. It kind of helped, you know, launch the second phase of Richard Pryor's career when he went from like Ed Sullivan comedian to, you know, the Richard Pryor that we know. And again, Red Fox was sort of at the forefront of launching these party records. And, you know, even George Carlin did his first album. I don't know if it was his first album, but he did a album with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just, like I said, we talked about Dolemite a little bit, but he was like another party record.
Oh, yeah, Dolemite. We forgot Dolemite, yeah.
Another party record guy who started out doing these party records and the kind of taking this character Dolemite and then, you know, using the money from his records going, oh, this is obviously going to be popular, and then kind of self-producing movies with that, you know, so you know, making money.
Yeah, starting with his 1970 debut album, Eat Out More Often.
Some folks say that Willie Green was the baddest motherfucker the world ever seen. But I want you to light your joint, take a real good shit, and screw your wig on tight. And let me tell you about the little bad motherfucker called Dolemite.
That's right. And I believe there are a number of women on the cover of that album as well. Who might be
Yeah, and just to point out, there was another party record guy named Jimmy Lynch, and his big album was called Return of the Funky Tramp.
A party with the rare, out-of-sight Funky Tramp. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only out-of-sight gentleman, taking care of plenty, plenty of business, fantastically, out of groovy sight. Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Lynch, bring him on with a round of applause. Jimmy Lynch!
Or I think his moniker was Funky Tramp, and then he did another album called Return of the Funky Tramp, 1974, and he ended up working with Dolemite, most particularly in such movies as Disco Godfather.
Oh, Disco, okay, yes, Disco, that was the sequel to Dolemite, yes.
Yeah, so I guess how that ties in is just, again, it was like a whole, like, almost like a Second City training ground that launched careers of, you know, people that went on to do, you know, iconic comedy projects outside of stand-up.
Yeah, it's kind of cool also to have this preserved as part of history of, like, this is what a live performance was.
Yeah, live performance, but also kind of like these were these records that you had to buy under the counter, wrapped in, like, because the album covers are just like funny, but you had to get them, and then it would just be kind of like an event, like at a stag party, or the kids are sleeping and the adults are up, and you'd put on this party album.
Right, exactly.
And it would just be blue material, and it's just like in, like, you know, 1960s America, you know, that must have been, we wouldn't even know what that's like, because no. We're just so jaded with, you know,
the internet,
anything you can find on the internet. No. And lastly, of the legacy of party records is, like, yeah, like you said, the Beastie Boys and other famous musicians and DJs have sampled tracks from party records, ranging from the Beastie Boys, you know, they did also like a couple tracks of Richard Pryor to, like, NWA sampled Skillet and Leroy and Tina Dixon. So it lives on that way.
I don't put my dick in the mattress.
What kind of party is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I am uptight and outraged.
Yeah, so I think that does it for party records. If you have anything else, yeah. You, as the listener, would like to add, please comment on either on our website, wordsoverchair.com, or on our iTunes page, where you can subscribe, comment, rate our podcast. We would appreciate that. Anything else, Scott?
Be sure to donate. Oh, yeah. We can always buy some, we can buy some more party records with that money.
Oh, yeah. So we was – there we go. I just did the
You did your catchphrase. Okay.
I know. I did my catchphrase. That's my branding.
It is.
But, yeah, donate. We appreciate the people that donate. They throw in like a fiver or even a dollar, and that helps to buy blue pencils where we can – we mark up for editing on the reel-to-reel tapes when we edit these podcast episodes.
Right, exactly.
So I think that does it for Comedy History 101. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.